Joe, we're back. How you doing?
Just another perfect day. So glad to be alive and standing.
Yes, all things considered, you're fortunate, I guess.
I guess, though now I get the agony of dealing with insurance companies. That after our last show, which we recorded on Friday night, I believe, the winds came during that night, accelerated the fire, and it just exploded all around us. And so everyone was evacuated. We just got out shortly before the fires got real close. We actually could hear the flames and, had that real personal, visceral relationship with terror. but then we got back after, like, I think we were evacuated for 5 or 6 days. And then we got back and the house is all beaten up. Didn't burn, but there was ash and one of the windows, the wind and flames blew it out. And so from that, in that one window, all the smoke got in and ash. And so now it's, got to do a big cleanup. But this isn't going to stop me from having the greatest Christmas of my lifetime. Because today we are going to be able to give to the normies and all those who suffer with them a Christmas present. We talked about a show a while ago, which is basically just a collection of what amounts to internet addresses, because in the internet addresses will take you to documentation about events that will wake the normie up so he understands that his reality is not what he thinks it is. We're not going to give like the actual internet addresses, but I think people will be able to create their list just from the descriptions, that we give of these things. And anyway, we had discussed earlier and I said, I have some specific things, but in order to really understand them, they have to be placed in context. And so basically there've been a lot of documented broad-based programs that been created by governments, which demonstrates that there's a secret society, that democracy is not really penetrating into the behavior of government in a real way. And so, Tim, please help us help the normie. I mean, can you start the stocking stuffer off with some descriptions of these things?
Yes, there are a few well-documented events or operations that reveal to the extent that there are false flags, there are government conspiracies, corporate conspiracies, our democracy is largely false, and the people are kept from knowing what's really going on in the world, so they really can't have a real influence or informed, we don't have informed consent government, let's just say that. We don't have government by informed consent. We have democracy manipulation, based on demagoguery and misinformation and manipulation, psychological warfare. And some of these cases, I think, highlight that. And these serve a function because by presenting these examples, it's kind of like truth 101. Basic things, and that not only do these aren't just singular events, although they should not only enlighten someone on the true nature of the state and the interest behind the state, but it also the implications of these things. It's not, you don't just look at these events or programs as singular events. There's a wide implication of these things. The fact that they're well documented, they do exist. And my list begins one. I think is Operation Northwoods. In the spring of 1962, this proposal was put forth by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to President John F. Kennedy, called for fake or actual terrorist attacks carried out against the United States to be conducted by the United States or United States agents, done in such a way that would place blame on Cuba. And this would provide a pretext for invading the island, nation, then ruled over by Fidel Castro. And so, and this is documented. It was, I think, revealed around 1999 or 2000, part of the JFK Record Review Board process that was signed into law by George H.W. Bush, I believe, but wasn't implemented till Bill Clinton was president. But basically, the plan submitted by the General Lyman Lemonster, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to John F. Kennedy, called, well, one thing, a series of well-coordinated incidents will be planned to take place in and around Guantanamo and give genuine appearance of being done by hostile Cuban forces. Remember the Maine incident. That's interesting. Could be arranged in several forms. We could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo and blame Cuba, Guantanamo Bay. We could develop a communist Cuban terror campaign in Miami area and other Florida cities and even Washington. Even Washington. The terror campaign could be pointed at refugees seeking haven in the United States. We could sink a boatload of Cubans en route to Florida, real or simulated. So they're willing to take on real casualties here or have crisis actors, I presume. Use MIG-type aircraft by U.S. pilots could... U.S. pilots could provide additional provocation, harassment of civil air attacks on surface shipping, and destruction of U.S. military drone aircraft by MiG-type planes would be useful as a complementary action. It also called for faking the shooting down of an aircraft, possibly using a drone, and then having fake victims, I presume fake loved ones grieving over these victims. So this was a proposal. It was, of course, reportedly forthwith rejected by John F. Kennedy. Lyman Lemonster was then, I guess he was fired, and of course when you're in government, particularly in the military, you don't get fired and you're out of a job, you get reassigned. And he went out to head NATO. And that roughly coincided with the Operation Gladio, another false flag terror campaign carried out by elements of MI6, CIA intelligence, and also remnant fascist groups. In Europe, it grew out of originally that plan grew out of a contingency plan during World War II to carry out stay-behind attacks against occupying forces, first against the Nazis, then anticipating a Red Army assault on Western Europe. In the case the Red Army ran over Western Europe, these stay-behind networks would then avail themselves of various caches of weapons and disrupt enemy actions behind the lines. But then, as years went by, it became clear that the invasion wasn't going to happen. These groups started carrying out false flag terror campaign as a psychological warfare effort to fundamentally change the politics of target European countries, namely Italy, in Germany, and also in Belgium. They had random shopping malls shot up, and those were, of course, that weaponry or munitions were traced to some of these Gladio caches. The campaign was revealed in various. Parliamentary and judicial inquiries in Italy, I believe, and in Belgium, and it was admitted, and they've had witnesses testify the fact that this one guy, Vincenzo Vergara, Vinciguerra, summarized the campaign, and he said it this way: "You had to attack civilians, the people, women, children, innocent people, unknown people, far removed from any political game. The reason was quite simple: they were supposed to force these people, the Italian public, to turn to the state." To ask for greater security. So here you have so-called elements within the security apparatus, intelligence apparatus, elements within the government operating with various intelligence agencies and secret societies, Masonic secret societies like P2 Lodge. And they had established what amounted to a parallel government, various elite figures within the military, within media. In fact, one of the participants eventually became the Prime Minister of Italy. They were charged with carrying out false flag attacks to change the politics, to scare the people towards the right. And this, of course, this is in the context of the Cold War. Judge, keep on going, then we'll summarize and then we'll go into your list. Is that the best way to do it?
I think so, sure.
Okay.
I
mean, okay. Operation Mockingbird. One of
I wanted to ask a question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Operation Mockingbird. One of the reasons, perhaps, why the Americans are so ill-informed and not aware of such things is because Operation Mockingbird was a plan concocted in the late 1940s, more or less from the day that CIA opened its doors and to go into business. Was there to co-opt and control the mainstream media. And how it worked was, it was exposed in 1967 in Rampart's magazine. But basically, key journalists and editors in the mainstream media, with newspapers, electronic media, were recruited by the CIA to promote U.S. policy or, quote, U.S. interest in the media and to propagandize the public and knowingly misinform the public, whether it's black propaganda, gray propaganda, or white propaganda. And more or less, to what we know as the mainstream media, the CBS or New York Times or Washington Post, were completely co-opted by the CIA and the interest that it does represent. That would be the oligarchy. This was exposed in the 1970s, sort of a limited hangout with the Rockefeller Commission and church committee hearings, these things. But it was never really quite exposed. 1977, Carl Bernstein wrote an article for Rolling Stone magazine claiming that the revelations of the church committee were a limited hangout. It was much worse. I think as many as 400 top journalists were on the payroll of the CIA at one time. That is what is admitted. So we can only imagine it's much worse. Of course, examples of...
The whole media is fake, basically. Yeah. That's what that admission...
And that's domestic. I mean, more recently, we had the German journalist, Ude Olfkote, I think it's pronounced that. He said that, you know, he worked for the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, the German major German newspaper, I think, out of Frankfurt, of course. And he said that the whole media in Germany was bought up by the CIA, and you had to write stories at the directions of the CIA. And when he revealed this in 2014, he said he was putting his life at risk. And the next year, he dies of a heart attack at the ripe old age of 56.
Ouch.
So there you go. And, of course, how they control the media, of course, you can bribe them. Put them on the payroll. You can make it. It's pretty much clear if you buck the system, you don't have much of a career as a journalist. It's the difference ending up. The difference is ending up like Gary Webb, depressed and supposedly committing suicide in your house that you're forced to sell for writing about exposing the CIA's cocaine importation operations during the 1980s to fund the Contra operation and to flood South Central LA with cocaine. You end up virtually unemployed, but the difference is you become like a journalist. You're like not Carl Bernstein, but with his cohort. What's his name? Bob Woodward with a mansion in Georgetown. or you end up like Michael Hastings, Gary Webb, or Danny Casolaro, all of whom ended up dead for their journalistic investigations. Last is telling because a lot of this, what we're talking about here, when we're talking to normies in our family and friends or just at the bar or just talking about the news, chewing the fat, is you'll be accused of being a conspiracy theorist. Well, that's interesting because the term conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorist being sort of a term of abuse, someone wearing a tinfoil hat and not, you know, either paranoid and not well grounded in reality. Well, that term was coined by the CIA in a dispatch. I think it was memorandum number 1035960, and it was sent out to their field offices, to their overseas, with the intention of getting back, coming back home, and affecting how journalists cover news stories here. Particularly, this was meant to target those who were skeptical of the. Of the Warren Report regarding the Kennedy assassination, that anyone skeptical of the findings of the Warren Report would be called a conspiracy theorist. So when you're a conspiracy theorist, you were not to be trusted, you're paranoid and borderline crazy, and you could just be dismissed. So that's my list. These are the basic things people should know about what's been going on. And if you focus on these things, you get a good grasp on what is likely or possible in terms of how we're being manipulated, misinformed, and being subjected to all types of psychological warfare.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a perfect foundation for the normie. And I think that anyone who is struggling, with a normie or normies in your personal life, would do real well to just create, you know, a list that had those programs. Try to, you know, you can either just give a straight Wikipedia link to it, or do some, you know, some kind of brief descriptions about it to help them clarify. But I mean, I would just say to them, if someone doesn't have that foundation, they're going to have a hard time understanding post-World War II America. My first stocking stuffer is basically just the continuation of the projects that you have been mentioning. And mine, by the way, and I start out with is MK Ultra, which is something that is, you know, enormously documented. Wikipedia actually has a pretty good link to it. And I think that's just kind of like a foundation piece. And I wanted then to say my second stuffer, which links to the first one, is also the Wikipedia. It's not the best, but it's good enough. The Wikipedia description of Ewan Cameron, because he was MK Ultra, and he conducted experiments on humans that led to death and insanity. And so this is really important, you know, for people to know that the government is authorizing programs that treat, you know, the civilians, the citizens as animals. And then beyond that, Cameron can be said to have been basically the father of the modern understanding of the Holocaust. He was in charge of the German psychological rehabilitation, so-called, following World War II, and he was the one who framed the Germans as an insane people. Now, there's clearly something wrong here analytically, because he was actually doing everything he was accusing the Germans of doing. And this is something that, you know, can be given to a normie just using the normal Wikipedia links. And so I think that's a really good place to get the normie moving into the post-World War II reality. Then the next one is also related to MKUltra, and that would be Gregory Bateson. Bateson was really the father of the CIA. There are various people who can be coherently given that title, but Bateson would be my choice in that Truman, who funded it, tried to shut it down. Donovan, who was trying to promote the creation of the CIA, couldn't come up with a rationale that would convince Truman to go forward, and he brought in Gregory Bateson. And Bateson said that, you know, because they're going to have terrible weapons in the future, like nuclear bombs, that the governments needed basically the science to control people through psychology. And so this really is our modern world. It was established basically when Bateson created the CIA. Now, this means, of course, that the CIA is not what we think it is. It's not, you know, an intelligence agency. That is kind of like the field cover. I mean, the agency has this idea that it sells to the public that it's an intelligence agency, you know, involved in international skullduggery and whatnot. But that's nonsense. I mean, that's like a field agent claiming to be, you know, a farmer or something, you know, in order to like gain access to people's information. The CIA has always been basically the operation arm of what Bateson had stated was a necessary function, you know, that needed to be created for government to control people through psychology. And that's why the first real project of the CIA was MKUltra, which is, you know, sold to the public as something that trained individual assassins, but that was just the public veneer. You know, once you start getting into, you know, what actually was produced by it, you can see that really it was designing psychological techniques to control the population. Now, Bateson can be really well understood by a letter that he wrote which was produced by Dr. David Price. And that letter is my next stocking stuffer, and it's available online, and it can be excerpted from Price's book, Weaponized Anthropology. And in it, Bateson stated that, you know, he was giving advice on how to create a slave state, and he said what you needed is to have a stable slave state was an archaic revival. The people who were being enslaved needed to have given admiration for embracing their past. So they would see their folkloric dance and drug use and religion and clothing, that all these things were somehow very important to protect. And that way they wouldn't be upset by the technology that the superior people was used to enslave the inferior people. And those are Bateson's own terms. And that's another really important thing for the normie to understand, is that Gregory Bateson, who is sold to the public as this humanist, actually is found, in his own words, to showing the techniques needed for a superior people, his term, to enslave an inferior people, his term. So now, once Bateson has established with the creation of the CIA and with the foundation of the plan to have an effective slave state, now you get to see the plan in action. So you start out with MKUltra, you go into Bateson, you get to see Bateson's advocation of an archaic revival, and then you get to see the U.S. start to implement it. Because the next stocking stuffer is Gordon Wasson. And again, this is a Wikipedia link, because Dr. Jerry Russell and I waged a battle at Wikipedia to get a link included in the Gordon Wasson page that would take you to the MKUltra pay requisitions for Subproject 58. And now everyone can see, including the normie, that the Life magazine story, which created the psychedelic revolution, everyone would admit this, Tim Leary, John Lennon, they all cite Gordon Wasson's trip to Mexico. It is in black and white. It was Subproject 58 of MKUltra. Now we're starting to see the whole destruction of culture being brought about by the CIA and its operations, basically to establish this effective slave state by administering the techniques to create a new culture. And with Wasson, you started the path down to the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, the hippie, the whole abandoning of kind of a modern perspective of life, and of course the destruction of the family, because in the commune, with the sexual degeneracy that's being sold, not going to be a real strong structure for the family to exist in. And then that takes us to the next stocking stuffer, Tim, which is Gloria Steinem's admission that she's a CIA agent. Again, this is just a YouTube. Anyone can get this up and show it, and it's Steinem going off on, she got caught, as you had mentioned that Ramparts magazine was involved with an expose of CIA activities. Prior to this, they also were involved in exposing Gloria Steinem as a CIA agent. They got the documents. She had to give a press conference and admit it. She lies in the press conference, and then you want to link Gloria's CIA admission, in which she lies and talks about the CIA as being this great organization and liberal. And you also want to link that with Kathy Sarachild's interview. Again, this is it's an audio tape. It's online. And she details, specifically Steinem's line and how long an agent Steinem had been. Sarachild's, credentials as an honest liberal feminist are just impeccable. So there's no way that she can be dismissed. She just goes, chapter and verse, and she just shows Steinem as an agent. And so now you can see that feminism, the aggressive anti-male, anti-family version of feminism that Steinem produced, was another part of the archaic revival concept that Lawson was involved with. Okay, so going on. Two little stocking stuffers, which are analysis that I did. These are available at postflaviana.org. They're free. You can go there, look at the article, and then take the link and put that in your stocking stuffer. The first one is an article I did on Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger's disgusting Masonic cesspool of a book. And I show in my analysis that the entire book is just an homage to Freemasonry and to a kind of Freemasonry that's really violent and kind of self-absorbed and wanting to kill people, wanting to basically, F you, the entire world. And because he's hiding this, and kind of cryptic symbolism that you have to decode a little bit, this shows the normie that there's this whole reality that they're not catching, that the media is something that they don't really understand, that the control of the media is something they don't really understand. And then going forward with that, I also would cite the analysis I did on Ken Kesey. And again, I show that his book, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, has this cryptic Freemason symbolism. And this is really a dangerous kind of Freemasonry. It's promoting drug use to create, imbeciles. And in that article, I also have an analysis of the handbills that were passed out for the acid tests, which were Ken Kesey's introduction of LSD to the American public. LSD was given out free to children. All this is documented. And the house band was the Warlocks. They became the Grateful Dead. And the handbill has the all-seeing eye and the temples of Joaquin and Boas. When asked about the handbill, the manager of the band, Hank Harrison, who is Courtney Love's father, he said, well, the reason that we have all this weird Masonic symbolism here and everywhere else in the Grateful Dead's promotion is because we're all Masons. And then he goes, beyond that, we're all Masonic families. We have Masonic family backgrounds. So again, this shows the normie that, look, underneath what you see as, reality of this little stupid blues band with their idiotic, lyrics and kind of plinking of the guitars, there's something that you don't get. There's something that the normie should be paying attention to. The next thing linking to that I would mention is that there's a record of a car accident right outside the MKUltra hospital. There was two of the Grateful Dead band members, but this was long before the band had ever even come into existence. And the two members were Jerry Garcia and Robert Hunter. Hunter was an employee of MKUltra, like Ken Kesey, but more importantly, the other occupant of the car was Alan Trist. And this just shows the normie that, look, there's something here. You're not seeing reality, because that is the son of Eric Trist, who's the founder of the Tavistock Institute, which would be sort of the MKUltra counterpart in Britain. So then I would also point out, as a stocking stuffer, would just be Dave McGowan's work on Laurel Canyon. There's some good summaries of it that he created before he passed away. They're available at his website. You can go link that, give that to the normies. They can see that all of these rock and roll stars that they, Morrison, Zappa, David Crosby, these people are the sons of military intelligence, you see. So there's something going on that you don't know. Now, finally, the last stocking stuffer. This is everywhere. It was what really started me, Tim, down the path. I was an army until I saw the video. It's the Building 7 collapse. Okay, that's the perfectly symmetrical free fall at free fall speed of a building that was not run into by an airplane. Had a fire on one side of it, asymmetry, right, producing symmetrical collapse in all defiance of the laws of physics, can't happen. And so you just show that to an army, and say, look, friend, how does it collapse symmetrically? How is that possible? How does it collapse at free fall speed? How is that possible? Why is there a pyroplastic? In other words, why there's all kinds of dust if it's just actually collapsing, falling? How come that the whole building is turning into dust? Now, if they try to contest it, and I've actually had people do this, I always ask, can you give an example of one building that wasn't controlled demolition that collapsed symmetrically? Can you name one? Is there one? And when they say no, because there isn't, say, well, why not? Let them chew on that. And then if they still argue, then say, well, is there any building that ever collapsed at free fall speed that wasn't controlled demolition? And when they say, well, I can't think of any, then you say, well, you see, the reason why there isn't is because it can't happen. You see? And so now this is going to lead to a probably an unpleasant Christmas dinner, Tim, for the North. but hopefully, you know, one where there'll be the light of truth to help with the digestion. What do you think?
Yeah, regarding Building 7, I remember several years ago I was watching Tucker Carlson was approached to that question about Building 7, but the free fall collapses. Symmetrical free fall collapse occurring from asymmetrical damage. And he says, well, of course it can happen because it did happen. And that was his...
Oh, God. A logical fallacy
in that answer, I guess.
Yeah, but you see, that's the thing. There's nothing that anyone can do with it other than to go sideways. They can only go sideways because once they start to try to defend it, they know. And you see, they're trained in this. They're obviously the media, the agents, you know, sort of the mockingbird actors like Carlson or, you know, Bill Riley or, you know, I mean, they're all basically just government operatives. They are trained precisely in how to go sideways on this question because they know that it's just something that they can't explain with the narrative. And so they know how to go sideways. Mm-hmm. But a normie who is made alert by the foundation pieces you laid and by the examples I gave would say, well, Tucker, that isn't really an answer. What I asked was, how could it happen? Mm-hmm. Examples of it happening in any other time, right? Yes. And remember, you have a combination of singularities. You know, it's not just that it collapses symmetrically. It's not that it collapses at free fall speed. It does both. You can't even find one single building collapse that is not controlled demolition that has even one, let alone two. So let's see, Tucker, he's supposed to be this honest, exposing, kind of falseness. Let's see him answer that question.
Mm-hmm. Well, he won't. Gloria Steinem, key figure because what she represents, the lifetime actor concept, which you've brought to the fore, it's an important concept because these are change agents that are put up there to radically influence society. Not so much that everyone becomes a Gloria Steinem, but just that many people, particularly women, will internalize enough of her philosophy to wreck their lives and wreck society. Of course, we've seen that. And her job was to make sure that women were docile sexual robots and wage slaves in service of the empire. And that's what she did. That's what feminism does, because it destroys the real resistance, the real firewall to totalitarianism, to corporatism, and that is the sacred family, the autonomous, you know, what family, these things, the idea of culture and community, these things, the building blocks for these things. And also what it shows, just the relationship between all these figures, whether it's Gloria Steinem or Al Ginsberg or even the artists, the rock musicians, they're all figures that are put up there for a reason and promoted for a reason. We had earlier talks about, you know, Elvis Presley, the article that was written by
Miles
Mathis. And, of course, that what he wrote about Elvis Presley can be said, you know, about true about the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or the Grateful Dead. I mean, the Grateful Dead, I heard someone tell me that, you know, Jerry Garcia, he wasn't a guitar player that was recruited by the CIA. He was a CIA agent who became a guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, that's the better way to understand the relationship. I mean, and that's literally true with Jerry Garcia. I think you can look at elements like maybe perhaps the Beatles and even Elvis Presley being musicians being utilized. But in this case, Jerry Garcia has a pedigree which is very, very suggestive of an intelligence asset. Same thing with, you know, with what's his name, Stephen Stills, and these things. So
yeah,
you know, so yeah, all these figures are very important. And of course, today's generations, they may not listen to this music anymore. And although it is played, and I have to say, just as a musical critic, I think it was better music than what's put out there today, because music itself has been intentionally dumbed down. But nevertheless, it had its impact. And although people may not know the name, you know, 20 millennials and 20-something-year-olds may not know the names of Stephen Stills and may not care so much for the, you know, they may know about the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, but some of these other musicians, the Mamas and the Papas, it had its effect because they are the grandchildren or the children of the grandchildren of the people who were affected by this music. And the music was a soundtrack to the era, and the era was the Vietnam War and these things. And you talk about MK Ultra and these things. MK Ultra wasn't just, I guess it wasn't just this sexy lone assassin story we hear, but it's a lurid story about lone assassins and robotic, you know, assassins going on. No, it was mass drug experimentation, mass psychological warfare. And the two interacted with each other because, again, you didn't have to make sure everyone got dosed. All you had to do was make enough of people get dosed so it affected society, the drug culture, the whole psychedelic era, this stuff. All this is being promoted. MK Ultra and things like Disney Corporation. People have made the links between how the Disney Corporation benefited greatly from the help from the CIA. The construction of Disney World down in Florida had CIA all over it. And, of course, SRI, which consulted in the construction of Disneyland in California, the same year like Disneyland broke ground, CIA opened up MK Ultra with SRI consulting in its operation. So I don't think that's just a coincidence. And if you look at the influence that corporations like Disney do on entertainment and the influence that entertainment has on culture, like the degradation of culture, particularly with these, you know, these kids that come out of the Disney stables and become overly sexualized, like Britney Spears or Miley Cyrus, these things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious that this is a broad-based cultural program. This is a broad-based cultural program that's being carried out, you know. So it's yeah, these connections are important.
Absolutely, really, that's just well said. I would say that, you know, you want to like kind of see how Disney, because people I think have a hard time getting past the propaganda veneer of Disney as mm-hmm. this child-friendly, you know, fantasy world. They should look at the relationship between Disneyland and Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. I mean, the original park was a 100% homage to Freemasonry. All of the, you know, Mark Twain and Davy Crockett and Lewis Carroll. I mean, all of the Magic Kingdom's, you know, representation, you know, Snow White, Pinocchio. These are the works of Freemasons. And then Disney had the temerity or audacity to you know, put a Club 33 on Main Street.
Yes.
With Masonic symbols everywhere, just right in your face, you know. Now bear in mind, when you look at the analysis of Ketra Narai I did, which just shows these obvious Freemason initiation processes that are cryptically you know, represented in Holden Caulfield's life, Salinger was military intelligence, right? He comes from the OSS. The Freemasonry that he's represented then is very much in the same kind of this connection that Disney has with military intelligence. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That you have the fantasy world of Holden Caulfield, but you have over it, you have the control of the Freemasons, the homage to Freemasonry. And then in back of that is the so-called military intelligence. Well, I mean, that pattern just plays out over and over again. And once the normie has got the pattern kind of, you know, just the understood as to how it is laid out, then they can look at, you know, MK Ultra and the activity it did. And then I think they can easily branch out. I mean, you know, it's like, they weren't trying to develop robot agents when they were conducting Operation Midnight Climax.
No, yeah, yeah.
And when they dosed the whole village of Pont-Saint-Paris in France, this isn't trying to develop a military intelligence. I mean, these are just, an agent. These are social structures. You know, this is where the agency and this is where the program is really heading. They're trying to control us. They're trying to learn how to get into our minds and create control. And they're also shaping our population through warfare. So on one hand, you get the the good like shows we've done on the Vietnam War, I think, are good examples of this, where on one side you have the warfare grinding down both the population's numbers and also the mentality of the individuals involved in the debacle. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, you have the counterculture, ready to embrace the soldier returning and basically get him right into drugs and depraved sexuality. And so this combination is what we're getting hit with,
Yeah, society in general is bloodied by the experience. It's bloodied by the experience. That's one of the reasons why the media was there in Vietnam to bring it home in living color to everybody. It wasn't there to undermine the war effort. It was there to introduce the population to the violence that it was. And that's the key there. It wasn't there to undermine the war effort. The opposition to the war was part of the overall psychological op that was the Vietnam War era. The music, the opposition, the support for the war. You have to look at these things in dialectics and how it's being manipulated, because that would play into the sort of the creation of the politics of the 1970s and these things. The economic malaise, the scandal, the Watergate, and these things. And at the same time, you have figures in California being groomed. First, you have Nixon from California, then you have Reagan from California. Of course, Reagan has connections back to, of course, the movies, entertainment, fake reality with Lou Wasserman and company and these things. So it's very, so you couldn't have had these figures if not for the, these politicians are created. There's kingmakers and these are the oligarchs and they're going to serve their interests. And you needed these events to enable, their way into office. You needed a Watergate, you needed a Ford and a Carter to get to Reagan. And I think what most people don't understand or appreciate is just how long-standing these psychological warfare operations or these social engineering schemes are laid out. Because, another example would be, maybe I didn't put it on the list, just the creation, the psychological warfare behind the creation of suburbia, which most people aren't aware of.
Right.
That's a key thing right there, suburbia itself and what it would do to the population in terms of demographics and just general outlook and kind of the conversion to a debt-based or debt-addicted consumer society, because you needed to break down whatever ethnic or ethno-religious identities they have, and to make kind of break it down and homogenize it, create sort of this homogeneous white culture that. That the media could manipulate and market to.
Yeah, the deracinated white middle class, as opposed to ethnic neighborhoods that had, strong ethnic perspective, had their own ideas about, what government was or what its limits were. Mm-hmm. When suburbia was created, it isolated. It's the same thing as sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It just takes people away from the capacity to have the normal beneficial bonds, right? Family, a lifetime relationship, ethnic connections, extended family into extended ethnic, relationship. That's strength. That is strength. The lone male in the singles bar, single mom on welfare. These things are. Basically, they have been enslaved. They may not recognize it. And that's one of the reasons why, I've always thought that the expression lifetime actor is useful for the normie. Something you can't get the normie to understand a lifetime actor until they go through the process, I think, that we've laid out. You got to start out with the foundation pieces that Tim gave at the beginning. And then some of the individual examples, can be more easily understood and believed once you get there. But now, to go further, you have this platform. This is what's going to enable them to basically take in information and be able to think on their own for once. So they can see that, basically, we are the victim of a weaponized culture, right? That's the thing. Yeah,
and that's what the whole understanding of Gregory Bateson, whose spouse was Margaret Mead, who authored, you know, this whole idea, you know, of coming of age in
Samoa.
In Samoa, which is sort of this Blue Lagoon anthropology, where this is, you know, this is a prelude to Kinsey, free love. This also coincides with the American Jewish Committee's the authoritarian personality, because the over-sexualization of society is how they're going to break up the fascist family, destroy the male role model, the father figure of these things. And really, it's this destruction of normal heterosexual lifestyle, which gives birth, you know, to the pathological homosexual, and now today with the gender identity politics, this all nonsense with this. You're breaking any link to reality now, because people's identities are so fractured and shattered and atomized, and they can easily be manipulated. And yeah. Indeed, they are.
And that's why I say, you know, I was mentioning, like, okay, so you have the concept of the lifetime actor. People also need to, like, understand that the concepts that they have been given, you know, like feminism and multiculturalism, that these are sort of like the term Federal Reserve. I mean, they're just created to confuse people.
And same with conservatism. So let's be fair.
Yeah,
it's right and left. Right and left. Yeah.
So that's why what I say, whenever you get into one of these components of the destroyed culture, like feminism or integration or multiculturalism, people should do is they should exchange those mind control descriptions with the description or the expression easy to enslave.
Mm-hmm.
So that people, you know, will just have automatically, you know, this understanding that there is there is something in back of it, you know, something that's dangerous, you know, that and so, you know, that's kind of that's kind of the first steps for the normie to take, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the good example of weaponized culture, an example of weaponized culture, you could say, would be Hollywood. And one of the focus on this one case, because most people many people won't appreciate that maybe Hollywood is just, you know, they're producing films, the lowest common denominator, just want to make money. Well, no, there's a cultural agenda to Hollywood. Of course, there's an ethnic component to Hollywood, particularly Jewish domination in Hollywood. But above and beyond that, an example of that is what we've talked about in the past was this production of blaxploitation films in the early 1970s. This follows the breakup of the Black Jewish Alliance in the mid to late 60s. And they're targeting the black community. This is the second phase. This is after the Great Society has decimated what remained of the black family. And now these communities are being targeted with this fair of entertainment. And so how is this so? Well, they're promoting pathological criminal behavior, immoral sexual behavior, criminal behavior, and romanticizing in these films. So, well, no, maybe just doing this is what they think they want to pay for, and this is what people will see. Well, no, if you've done the research like Michael Jones did, was these films were produced in conjunction with the CIA, MGM, and the Time Life publication empire. And if you think about it, there's no weird distinction between the CIA, Hollywood, and Time Life, because it's
the same thing.
It's the same thing. But he Gordon Parks, this photographer, which was used to infiltrate the Black Panthers because he was a black photographer. But he was used to produce these films, and this was done with James Aubrey, who was a CIA asset. And this was conducted. These various entities, these cultural institutions, you know, Time Life and Hollywood, and of course the CIA, intentionally producing these films to degrade the culture. So within a few years, you'll have 800 deaths in South Side of Chicago in 1 year being shot, because that's what they want. They want to create these poverty zones for whatever reasons, to destroy this particular ethnic group, also to long term to destroy a certain area of town. So in 20 years, the property values will plummet, and you can then regentrify it and reap the profits. I mean, this is how it's done, and that's with drugs and violence and these things. This is how, I mean, if you don't think that's done domestically, well, it's done internationally, it's done overseas. What do you think, what do you think is going on in Syria right now, or Haiti, or Latin America, where weapons are flown in to stir up trouble, to foment civil war, to keep society on edge and unstable, to keep it from developing? That's to keep labor and resources cheap, and to keep those areas from developing. Why do you think the CIA and Western intelligence agencies, even the Mossad, have been actively, throughout the several decades in their operation, they've actually promoted Islamic radicalism and fundamentalism? That's a Western operation, because they want to fund radicalism, because that's the way you just destabilize. And it's the same thing with domestic politics. If you really borrow into some of the left-wing and right-wing politics, political organizations in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, these things are often aided and abetted by the intelligence agencies and the foundations. They stir up the politics, then fund the organizations and groups. And some of the key figures, whether it's, Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell, or some key political activists like, from the early 80s, the New Right, all had connections to intelligence agencies. And they were paid well, handsomely for their efforts. And that's why we know who they are. But they were, the politics is being choreographed and controlled. And as citizens or as subjects, we're supposed to pick sides, one or the other, and fight it out with each other while they rule over us,
Right. Absolutely. Well said. So last stocking stuffer, it is found in the authoritarian personality.
Oh, yes.
Which was created by the American Jewish Committee, who hired the Frankfurt School, which had been involved with efforts to mind control Europeans, basically the creation of cultural Marxism. The American Jewish Committee hired this group of thinkers, and they produced the infamous authoritarian personality paper. And here is where most of the programs that have become sort of modern political correctness can be found. And they actually wrote this down so that everyone can read it and see it. And they wrote that that it would be difficult on the basis of clinical and genetic studies reported in this volume to propose a program which, even in the present cultural pattern, could produce non-ethnocentric personalities. In other words, it's going to be tough to produce a non-ethnocentric personality, because all that is really essential to create that is that children be genuinely loved and treated as individual humans. But for ethnocentric parents, the prescribed measures, their ideas, would be almost impossible, right? Because they're just going to go on being themselves. So they say that it is obvious, therefore, that the modification of the potentially fascist structure, ethnic-centric, ethnic pride of Europeans, is a potentially fascist structure, cannot be achieved by psychological means alone, right? It is not for the psychologist to say how such changes are to be brought about, because you're talking about the total reorganization of society. So they're saying that for this, for the fascist potential to be held in check, there must be an increase in people's capacity to see themselves. This cannot, and then they go on and they say that it is here that psychology may play its most important role. Techniques for overcoming resistance, right? In other words, for getting rid of ethnic pride, developed mainly in the field of individual psychotherapy, can be improved and adapted for use with groups and even for use on a mass scale. So what they're talking about is propaganda that will destroy ethnic pride, that will use all of the psychological sciences. They're not really, it's not particularly cryptic. And so they say that the potentially fascist pattern is this vast thing, and so they need to use propaganda in order to defend it. They need to go on a broad scale. So this is their conclusion, and they say, so that thus we need not suppose that appeal to emotion, right, this is how to control people, belongs to those who strive in the direction of fascism, while democratic propaganda must limit itself to reason and restraint. If fear and destructiveness are the major emotional sources of fascism, Eros belongs mainly to democracy. Hmm. Folks, this is sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Mm-hmm. This is sex, drugs, and rock and roll used to break down ethnic pride so that this group, the American Jewish Committee's American Frankfurt School, all Jewish individuals, except for one, I believe, of the 10 people on the committee, came up with the idea of how to break apart the sort of ethnic pride. Now, nowhere in the document is Jewish ethnic pride or cohesion seen as a problem. Has no potential problem, no reason to have any issues with that. So this document, I mean, you know, somewhat cryptic. You can argue, I think, kind of different ways of looking at it. No one has taken up my kind of desire to contest this, but I'll be happy to talk to people about it if they want. But I think it's really a very, very clear stocking stuffer, Tim. Yes. This is something citizens should at least be aware of, that groups are out there that are highly sophisticated in psychological means and couldn't be more powerfully wired into the government. I mean, you know, this is cultural Marxism. This is what becomes the pedagogy and the cultural perspectives on all of our universities. So it's very, very powerful, very, very potent social stuff. And yet at its core, it is propaganda. It is this idea of we are going to control people by influencing them without telling them we're doing it. So it starts out as a lie. It starts out as mind control. And so now when you look at MKUltra, when you look at Disney and Hollywood, when you look at the counterculture, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, I mean, it all starts to fit into the pattern, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. And you have to ask yourself, how is it this handful of mostly Jewish men were able to implement their program almost to the letter in succeeding 20, 25, 30 years? And they did.
That's a question.
You know, is it just a coincidence? Is the history unfolding again, or is there a plan? Is it being implemented? And again, they had to be like you said, to have this implemented, they had to be wired into all the power centers of government and corporate America and entertainment and these things. And it was implemented almost to the letter. If you look around,
once MKUltra was exposed, the public was given a great task. It had to uncover what it was doing, who was in back of it, what was the real purpose. None of these things have been done. There has been no vetting of it. Independent researchers, you and me, Tim.
Yeah. And just looking around, you go, well, look around you. Go to the mall.
Yeah.
And look at people.
Yeah, what happened?
What happened?
You know, what happened to between 1950 and now? I mean, mm-hmm. Why does it all look like this? You know, democracy is a veneer and a false, reality. It's kind of a fictional pageant. The normie thinks that, you know, they can vote for Hillary or Trump and there's some choice there. There isn't. Mm-hmm. Neither Hillary nor Trump would expose what is going on in terms of cultural propaganda. Both of them are promoters of it, are wired into the group that is maintaining this pressure against us. And so it's up to the citizen. You know, that's the meaning of this Christmas. It's up to us. We cannot rely on government. Government is the problem. It is the organized effort to basically take away our capacity to think freely and to think rationally.
Yeah, that's what it's all. I mean, that's broadly speaking, that's what MKUltra was, I guess. Through drugs and just confusion, operation chaos, and these things, to deny us the ability to, to kind of put us in a state of epistemic befuddlement with all.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's as an example. I mean, they pulled off 9/11. I mean, there was a protest. It lasted for a while, but that's. I mean, the citizen just shouldn't have accepted this. The citizen should never have accepted government after that fact.
Well, we didn't mention it, but you know, as JFK, because it's so obvious that JFK assassination.
Yeah. Yeah.
But his brains go out the back of his head, for Pete's sake, and we're still told.
Right.
You know, that the bullet came from the other, you know, he was killed from a shot from behind.
Yeah, that was like one of those things where anyone that might fool someone who has never fired a gun into something.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone who has will know that when the bullet strikes an object, the debris from the object doesn't go back toward the bullet.
Mm-hmm. No.
I mean, it just, again, it's like Building 7's collapse. It's the explanation that is given is in defiance of the laws of physics. And that's the point where the citizen needs to say, enough is enough. You know, the government is basically illegitimate. And that's, unfortunately, the real stocking stuffer lump of coal.
Yes.
You know, this is at the end of all of the bad tasting things. Then there is a lump of coal.
And lump of coal is
just the government's illegitimate. I mean, it is the veneer of democracy. It lies constantly in order to keep the public from understanding what it's doing. It's nothing but traitors.
So it gets me still surprised by it, how gullible they are. I mean, don't be upset that Matt Lauer is exposed as being a degenerate and a creep, because you shouldn't be relying on him anyway. You don't know him anyway. And it's like, you remember the, what was that movie called A Game Show about the $64,000 question? A pretty good movie. I don't know how accurate it is. I'm not an expert on that case. But basically, they were fixing a game show. Certain contestants proved popular. They would engineer the contestant that would win each show that should stay on longer, and they'd boost ratings and sell more products. And so the show goes into some of the motivations behind the people investigating, which were very personal and pecuniary, which is very interesting. It turns out the chief investigator just simply wanted notoriety so he could buy a Cadillac. Or at least that's how it's presented in the movie. But they do this big scandal, you know, how this guy isn't really a whiz, that he's actually they're faking these game shows. And then it comes out, and there's a scandal, and then there's a law passed, whatever. But at the end of the show, the narrator goes, at the end of the day, what was the big deal? We were just selling soap. And the point is, that's a good question, because the people watching the TV should ask themselves, instead of playing the victim, so this passive figure, I just have to take in all this information, why would you expect this screen, the Videodrome, to be honest when it's a production? It's an obvious production. That's the same way we should look at the evening news. Or, you know, why would you expect it to be truthful?
You know, it's funny, like I just think this is such a great question, and you bring this up a lot. This is the point you make, and I always am, you know, charmed by it when you say this, because it fits kind of, it makes me have a good sense of what's real in the world. I mean, no one should ever expect something in the TV or the video world to be real. These are fake images from the very beginning, right? They're always been fake, and yet now that's how we get our reality.
Yeah.
We get them through TV screens and through the internet video. But why?
It's pixelated reality or pixelated fake reality. That's also the issue of fakery. What the extent is there fakery? It's not a question if it exists. It's a question of the extent that it exists. That's the question you should ask yourself. I mean, people always say, you saw something on television. So it's just, well, listen, in 1993, I sat in a movie theater and watched a T-Rex eat a man off a toilet. And it looked real. It looked 100% genuine. Was it real? No. Do you think that technology is only applied to movies? Give me a break.
Right.
And what usually the technology we're presented with is probably 10, 20, maybe 30 years passé.
Yeah.
So, again, we're back to that epistemological befuddlement. But the thing, you just don't rely on the video. You can, I mean, it can be a source of some information. You have to be critical. You have to pick and choose. You have to be discerning in these things. But you like I said, good chance if you're watching a riot on television, it may be just a street brawl, and they just narrowed the camera angle, make it look like it's a riot because they want to, you know, stir trouble up, or just you have it be completely fake.
The means are available now. The internet creates this vast social connection where we can recreate the links to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the government, the secret society, will be in there trying to control this. But we have the physical capacity to talk to one another, to exchange ideas. we really take advantage of it. We really need to develop techniques to determine when government has created lifetime actors that are, you know, interfering with our communication with one another. Mm-hmm. And we really need to develop the techniques that we share with one another to defend ourselves against the propaganda that has been weaponized and is being used against us all the time.
And it's acknowledging that reality is the key thing. So, okay. Yep. Well, Joe, you think we covered it?
Oh, brother, Merry Christmas
Merry
to
Christmas.
You and all of the Kellys. Yep.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, and Merry Christmas to all of the listeners. We'll be back, and it's going to be a clarifying new year, I'm sure of it.
Yes, we'll know more next year than we did this year, that definitely.
You certainly will.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Joe.
Thank you so much, Tim. I'll talk to you next week.
Enjoy the Christmas. Bye-bye.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.